think it's all about communications and not doing the hard work. They need to address Brexit. They need to address Brexit quickly and get the money back into the UK and the growth we need. £40 billion in taxes is being lost this year because of Brexit. 30 times went fuel out.
Thank you all very much indeed. More to come.
BBC Radio 5 Live. Nikki Campbell. The voice of the UK.
Let's look at the Middle East. Prime Minister has told British nationals now is the time to leave Lebanon. This comes after fighting intensified between Israel and Hezbollah over the last few days. This morning, a Hezbollah missile fired at Tel Aviv. 3 killed in an Israeli strike, according to the Lebanon Health Ministry as well. The MOD sending 700 troops to nearby Cyprus to prepare for the possible evacuation of British nationals. And the government continues to advise against all travel to Lebanon. Worrying time for people there. Worrying time for people everywhere. And those with friends and families there. Let's get in touch with us this morning and have your say. Prime Minister has now arrived in New York for the UN General Assembly. He's told the BBC the Middle East is on the brink point, as he put it, of a full-scale war. So what do you want to know about Lebanon, Hezbollah, the current escalation? Joined by a panel of experts to answer your questions, BBC's international editor Jeremy Bowen will be with me. We'll also hear from those with expertise in the region and from our own correspondents in Beirut. So get in touch. Tell us what you'd like to know. Lebanon, your questions answered, coming up.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Call free 08085 909 693. Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rate.
Message on WhatsApp 08085 909 693.
Visit bbc.co.uk/5live terms
for our terms of use and privacy notice.
And Lebanon's ambassador to the UK will be coming on in a few moments. So not to take calls, but I'm sure if you send me a text, I can read it to him. And whatever you want to say, whatever. It's 2 minutes past 10. Here's the news from Bethan Holmes.
Thanks, Nikki. Hundreds of British troops have been sent to Cyprus as the government draws up plans for a potential evacuation of British nationals from Lebanon. The Prime Minister has warned Britons to leave the country immediately because of rising tensions between Israel and Hezbollah. Sir Keir Starmer has told the BBC he fears the Middle East could be on the brink of all-out war. While Israel has intercepted a Hezbollah missile towards Tel Aviv, the first time the city has been targeted, the group says it's targeting the headquarters of Israel's intelligence agency Mossad in retaliation for recent attacks. Women who allege they had intrusive medical tests while working at Harrods say the group intend to make a complaint to the regulator about a doctor. Several women have told the BBC they were made to have checkups while Mohamed Al-Fayed was in charge of the business. He's been accused of sexually assaulting a number of women. The doctor has been approached for comment. And the man suspected of trying to kill Donald Trump at his Florida golf course has been charged with the attempted assassination of a major presidential candidate. Ryan Ruth faces life in prison if found guilty.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Nikki Campbell.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Lebanon, your questions answered. Taking your thoughts as well. 85058, text them in, and 08085 909 693, call us. BBC International Editor Jeremy Bowen. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey, morning, Nikki.
Can we have a two-pronged approach from you, which you're so brilliant at? I want a little bit on the background to all of this, you know, 1982 and beyond, but also the very latest as well. Talk about this escalation and what has happened today. So, over to you.
Okay, well, to start with, back in 1980, Israel invaded Lebanon in 1982, and their intention was to deal with what they saw as a Palestinian menace in South Lebanon. And when they managed to kick out the Palestinians from there, the Palestinian leadership, Yasser Arafat, and in the vacuum that emerged then in South Lebanon, Hezbollah, who are not a Palestinian organization, they're an organization that started off among local Shia Muslims, they emerged basically to fight Israel, and their entire purpose since then, they've broadened out in other ways in Lebanon. They've got politicians, they've got people in government, they've got a quasi-welfare state, but they're also a very powerful militia, a so-called non-state actor. So the fight between Israel and Hezbollah goes back an awfully long way. Now, this particular version of it started the day after the 7th of October attacks last year, when Hamas attacked out of Gaza into Israel. And to support them, the leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, started sending rockets over the border into Israel. Now, at the time, Hamas, I think, was rather disappointed they didn't do more. But what it's actually done over the last, 11 and a half months is render the place pretty much uninhabitable for civilians. 60,000 have been moved down to central Israel. And I think that the Israelis, who have been very conscious of all of this, and in fact, you know, I've been up there quite a few times in the last year to the northern Israel, and local mayors and residents say the only way of doing it is to actually go to war properly with Hezbollah and invade Lebanon again. So what they are now doing, they have chosen, and there are question marks about the timing, but they have chosen now in the last few weeks to really radically, the Israelis, escalate what's going on, assassinations, that attack with pagers that they booby-trapped, weaponized, if you like, then radios, and then now these massive airstrikes. And one difference between, there are some similarities, but one difference between the war in Gaza and what's going on in Lebanon is that war with Hezbollah, which is 2006, which was effectively a draw, Israel and Hezbollah have been planning the next one. Israel didn't plan a fight against Hamas around Gaza because they thought they had the measure of Hamas. They were wrong, they were complacent, and they paid the price. But this time round, and you've seen from the way that they've targeted places, that whole business with the pagers, they have been preparing this for a long time. And so they now believe that they can, by exerting a great deal of pressure and pain on Hezbollah, and by extension Lebanon, that they can stop Hezbollah rocketing northern Israel. That, I think, is a doubtful proposition, because, as I said, the whole purpose of Hezbollah really is to fight Israel. It's why they exist. They have a massive arsenal, and while they've suffered some massive blows, they've actually stepped up the amount that they're putting into Israel at the moment. So that means, I think, that Israel will escalate. And my final point, that means most likely a ground invasion of some sort into South Lebanon once again.
And what implications would that have for the broader region, were that to happen?
Well, I think they would be considerable and profound. First of all, how would Hezbollah react? Up to now, even despite these very heavy raids they've been getting, they haven't actually done massive volleys of missiles and rockets into Israel, which they're capable of doing. They sent one today towards Tel Aviv, and the fact they only sent one was probably a bit more of a signal, saying, look, we still can do this.
Jeremy's on the move.
If they did it before.
Carry on.
Can you hear me right, Nicky? I'm in a tunnel, actually.
Oh, for sure.
I'm not driving. I'm being driven. I'm not all driving and talking. But we are travelling through Israel, and I'm soon going to get out of the tunnel, so bear with me. I think it's the final one on this stretch of road. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we got you, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I think that the implications of an all-out war, the fact is no one really knows, but, you know, the fear is that wider there'll be other people drawn in. The Americans telling the Israelis, please don't do this, have actually also, if you like,
We'll get out that tunnel and we'll get him back. The Americans telling the Israelis, please don't do this. That's interesting. We'll get back to Jeremy. Shashank Joshi, defence editor of The Economist. Good morning to you. What do you think about what is happening right now and what the implications of that may be, Shashank?
Good morning. Look, I have two thoughts here. One of them is something I'm surprised by, and I'm surprised we haven't seen more from Hezbollah. I know we've seen this missile fired at what Hezbollah claims is Mossad headquarters today. It's been intercepted, but they would have known a single ballistic missile fired at Tel Aviv would have been intercepted. They know Israel's defenses are good enough. So in some ways, I'm shocked Israel has eliminated a vast chunk of the Hezbollah high command, has eliminated what could be up to 40% of Hezbollah's missiles. And despite all of it, the retaliation has been surprisingly limited, whether that's by choice or whether by incapacity. And I guess linked to that is my second thought, which is that what Israel is going to find is, though they've pounded Hezbollah, they are going to run out of what we might call kind of less escalatory targets. You know, they've hit mid-level commanders, senior commanders, medium-range missiles. They've done huge, huge damage. But they will soon have to decide, do we start hitting Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, the political leadership, the long-range missiles? And if they do that, then Hezbollah's back is to the wall, and I think they have far less incentive to hold back that very, what I think remains a pretty sizable and capable missile arsenal.
There's a perception, of course, that there's a difference here. Hamas, the leadership, live in some luxury in Doha with plenty of personal finance, whereas the leaders, it would seem, of Hezbollah are in Lebanon. Some people say that. Is that right?
To some extent, yes. I mean, it's worth noting that Hezbollah are a shadow state. They're not elected in that sense. They wield power that is undemocratic, and they rule through intimidation. So, we should make that very clear. But I think the important thing is that Hezbollah have also grown a little bit fat on politics. That is, they have a stake in the Lebanese state. They want to survive as a ruling entity of Lebanon. And I think what that means is, in Israel's eyes, and I'm not endorsing this, and rightly or wrongly, Israeli generals and political leaders believe that to stop Hezbollah, to deter Hezbollah, you have to go after the Lebanese state. You have to go after the ports, the airport, the power grid, the water facilities. And again, I'm absolutely not endorsing that. But that kind of strategy, which has an element of collective punishment to it, there's no doubt about that, that is part of Israeli thinking in how you deter Hezbollah. That wouldn't work with Hamas because, of course, you know, they really don't. They really have no stake anymore in the political aspect of the government in Gaza.
Mm-hmm. And since, as Jeremy was saying, we're back to Jeremy in a minute, he's got through the tunnel. And since October the 8th, Hezbollah has fired nearly 9,000 rockets, killing 46 Israelis and displacing, as Jeremy said, 60,000 people. Some are saying that the British media is rather ignoring that.
It's I can't speak for the media. I know that my colleagues have travelled to northern, the Economist have travelled to northern Israel. I know the BBC has. I've certainly seen, you know, sort of Jeremy and his colleague, your colleagues, do that very well indeed. And we all remember that horrific attack from, I think it was August, in Majdal al-Shams in the Golan Heights, the Israeli-occupied territory in northern Israel, which killed many, many teenagers and young people. And that was a Hezbollah attack. And one of the things that was said to be shaping Israel's timeline here was that many children have been displaced from northern Israel, so they were keen to get them back in time for their school term. That hasn't happened. What I will point out, though, is we have to keep a sense of perspective on all sides here, and the massive displacement in northern Israel is serious and a really big politically prominent issue. The people in northern Israel feel abandoned by the government, but there has also been a huge depopulation of southern Lebanon, and we mustn't forget tens of thousands of people, I think about the same number really, have also had to flee southern Lebanon.
There's some really good texts coming in, and when the Lebanese ambassador comes on, I've got some good ones to put to him. Jeremy, back in a second. But Shashank, and you've partially covered this, but it's worth doing it again through the means of this particular text. I'm probably oversimplifying this, but why is Israel seemingly attacking an entire country in order to curtail the actions of the minority involved in terrorist activities? Your correspondent just spoke about the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah, not the conflict between Israel and Lebanon. Are the law-abiding people of Lebanon, who, like us, get up every morning, go about their peaceful business, being punished for the acts of a minority? Imagine if we had taken similar actions against the Irish Republican Army in the 1970s. You did touch on that, because, and it's interesting, I'd like you to develop it a bit, because it's so key, Shashank Joshi, that Hezbollah are so embedded in the state that Israel feel they have to go after the apparatus of the state?
I think there's two things here going on. One of them is attacks on what we might call predominantly civilian targets that have a huge impact on civilian life. Those actually haven't begun yet. They occurred in the war between Israel and Hezbollah in 2006, where we saw the Israeli Air Force bomb the airport. The Lebanese port, of course, is already destroyed. It blew up in that massive explosion some years ago, you might recall. But that hasn't begun yet. But that could yet happen if we see a further escalation. And I'm flagging that Israel will probably attack some of those sites in the event of the spread of the war. What your correspondent is getting at is, I think, the very high level of civilian harm we've seen. More than 500 Lebanese killed, lots of children. And here, I think, it's important to understand that when we talk about proportionality, militaries tend to talk about it in a slightly different way. They don't mean proportionality as in, you know, do similar numbers of people die on each side. What they mean in the legal sense is, if you go after a target, a senior Hezbollah commander in a building, it's not against the laws of war to expect some civilian harm when others in that building die. However, you know, that's not a war crime, as long as you're aiming for a military target. What must happen, though, is that you have to make sure the attack, the military gains, the anticipated military gains, are proportionate to the incidental harm, to that accidental harm. And that's a very subjective judgment, because if you're going after a really senior Hezbollah commander who you think is running the group's operations, the missile operations, how many civilians is an acceptable amount to die? I think that if people think the answer is zero, they're unrealistic about the way that any war is waged. But of course, at the same time, that doesn't mean your answer or my answer or even the British Army's answer would be the same as that of the Israel Defense Forces, who are operating in a different environment with different assumptions and perhaps with a much more expansive set of rules of engagement. So I don't necessarily agree with the sense that Israel is already seeking to inflict harm on the Lebanese public. I don't think that's right. But I think what is true is that the levels of civilian harm are high, and that will be a case of their judgments around proportionality that may differ from those that we have.
Thank you very much, Shashank Joshi. Jeremy's back. Are you back, Jeremy? You through the tunnels? Through the tunnels, ready to talk? Yeah.
Hello, tell me your question again, Nicky.
Yeah, I was just checking out you were through the tunnels. I think if you can hear these two texts, if you can hear me at the moment, this sums up contrasting views on this. Morning, Nicky and team, says Paul in Liverpool. Why isn't the world disconnecting and condemning Israel over its onslaught and atrocities being committed in Gaza and now Lebanon? The question seems so difficult when it's put to politicians and world leaders across the world. This one says, ask the Lebanese why over 40 years their country has done zero, nothing, nada to stop Hezbollah and Iran from taking over their country. The pain they're suffering right now is directly as a result of being a failed state. Two views. You just, when we lost you, Jeremy, you were saying, you were talking about America's attitude to what's going on at the moment. So if you'd like, can you expand on that?
Yeah, the Americans have made it very clear that, first of all, they don't want an escalation. They didn't want an escalation in this, what was a border war. And then they have also made it very clear that they don't want Israel to send in ground troops. However, Biden has said quite a few things over the last year or so regarding the way Israel fights in Gaza. But at the same time, he's continued to support it with diplomatic help, diplomatic cover at the UN and other places, and also with a very deep and profound stream of weaponry going. I think in a sense he's sending mixed messages, because to say to Israel, we don't want you to do this, but then saying, meanwhile, we're sending more troops into the region and ships and aircraft and another aircraft carrier, I believe, it sort of gives a message as well, but don't worry, we've got your back. So, you know, it could be one thing or the other. The complaint against Joe Biden's Middle East policy regarding Israel is that he does have leverage over diplomatic cover and weapon supplies, but he has chosen not to use it.
Thank you, Jeremy. Quick question. We've got the ambassador coming up, but Jenny in Bingley, I think you have a question. Good morning, Jenny. Jeremy may well be able to address it. Hi. On you go.
Hi, Nikki. Thank you. Yeah, just listening to what's being said, it's something I've been wondering about. Looking at the hostility between, the three elements, Hamas and, well, there's Palestinians as well, obviously, and Israel and the Hezbollah. I'm just wondering how much of the hostility is due to just the thirst for land and power, but how much of a factor is the hostility between the two religions, Islam and Judaism?
Well, the answer to that is when it comes to the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians, really the fundamental part of it is about the land, that the area between the River Jordan and the Mediterranean Sea, which Britain administered as one entity, Palestine, until 1948. And the question is whether that land can be divided between Israelis who've got their state and Palestinians who want a state. And that essentially was the essence of the peace process when there used to be one, was to find a way to divide that land. So land, basically, you know, two peoples, one piece of land. They both want it. Can they share it? Can they divide it? Those were the dilemmas of the peace negotiations back in the 90s. But they failed, sadly, because there was a chance that they might succeed. As for the religious element, you know, I think for many, many years it was quite a secular contest. But the Middle East has, since the Islamic Revolution in 1979 in Iran, radical Shia Islam has been a factor in the region, and Hezbollah are part of all of that as well. And also on the Israeli side, they are getting, the government, which used to be pretty much totally secular, is getting much more religious. Prime Minister Netanyahu isn't like that, but there are people in his cabinet who believe, Itamar Ben-Gvir is one example, who is an ultra-nationalist, who believes that it's all God-given land, and it belongs to the Jews and nobody else. And if you want proof of that, you simply have to look in the Jewish scriptures, and that's all you need to know, as far as he's concerned. So, yeah, religion is increasingly a factor in all of this. But in the Israeli-Palestinian thing, it's more about territory. Now, Israel isn't trying to get Lebanese territory, but they may decide they want to reoccupy part of it to try to make their northern towns more secure. It has to be said and always remembered that Israel actually did that for almost 20 years until 2000, when the then Prime Minister pulled out the troops because he decided it wasn't making northern Israel any more secure. And so he told them all to go home, which they did in the early part of that year. So, you know what? If it comes to a ground war in Lebanon, I think that it's going to be immensely disruptive, but it might in the end be, I don't know, I'm not a mind reader, I'm not a fortune teller, but it might in the end be inconclusive as well, because Hezbollah will continue to try and fire into Israel, which is supposed to be a major war aim of Israel to stop them.
Thank you very much indeed. On the subject of religion, many people would ascribe Islamism to Hezbollah, of course. They say in their charter, if Islam becomes the choice of the majority, we will apply it. If not, we will continue to coexist and discuss with others until we reach a common ground based upon correct beliefs. They've said that stronger stuff than that in the past as well. But listen, since the question there was about religion, Raimi Mortada is Lebanon's ambassador to the UK. Good morning, sir. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
A couple of practical things first off. The evacuation, will you make it easy for foreign nationals to get out? Commercial flights still available? Have you spoken to airlines as well? What are your concerns on that particular issue?
Definitely, we are cooperating with all countries who want to evacuate their nationals, and Beirut City Airport is still operational. I hope it will remain. So all the cooperation needed will be granted for countries who want to evacuate their nationals.
And Lebanon itself have good relations with the United Kingdom, don't they?
They do. We do have friendly relations, and the UK has always been on our side and has a major footprint in Lebanon's history and in current times. They're very active in Lebanon in military cooperation and culture and trade. And the political relations are also excellent.
Right, thank you. And the impact of current Israeli strikes. Give us a picture of what is happening on the ground within Lebanon and the internal displacement that is consequential to it.
Well, tragically, what is looming in Lebanon today is Gaza 2.0. It's just a more cynical and violent version of the Gaza conflict that has been going on now for soon, it will be a year. So clearly the Israeli government is preparing for another genocidal campaign against Lebanon. And what is very important to be said here is that this is really an unnecessary war, which could have been, all the grievances and the concerns could have been addressed diplomatically. And from our side in Lebanon, we've said it from day one that we would be willing to look at different concerns because we also have our concerns. Israel has been occupying part of our territories for decades now. Israel has been provoking the population in southern Lebanon for decades. But we have a text, we have a Security Council resolution, and we've always said that we want to make sure that this resolution stands and holds and continues to provide calm and stability at the border.
Okay, listen, you talk about another genocidal campaign. Some will say yes, some will say absolutely not. This is misplaced language. But Hezbollah, of course, their stated aim is to obliterate the Zionist entity, to obliterate Israel. What could be more genocidal language than that?
Of course, in the region, you hear narratives coming from different sides that are extremists. But the same Hezbollah you're referring to has been held back since 2006 up until October 2023. No single incident was reported at the Lebanese-Israeli borders. Thanks to this resolution, the United Nations resolution I mentioned, that Hezbollah is a player in Lebanon, and they've been exerting maximum self-restraint during more than 15 years until the Gaza conflict erupted.
And the Gaza conflict, October the 8th.
Yes.
October the 8th.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was a reaction to what Hamas had done in order to aid Hamas. And they fired over 9,000 rockets over Israel in the past 11 months.
What they started doing on October the 8th is low to mid-intensity skirmishes at the border, at this enclave that is still occupied by Israel called Sheba Farms, which is Lebanese territory, hoping to tilt the cost-profit equation for the Israelis and push them to stop their aggression against Gaza. But Israel took it as a chance to escalate, and here we are facing another Gaza in Lebanon, simply because we have a warmongering cabinet in Israel that wants to put the country in a continual state of war, trying to evade some internal dynamics, trying to evade the fact that they couldn't achieve one of their war aims in Gaza. They said they want to eradicate Hamas. Hamas is still in Gaza. They said that they want to bring back the hostages. The hostages are still in captivity. And now they're saying they want to secure their citizens in northern Israel. I think what they're doing will lead to exactly the opposite direction.
As Jeremy said, 60,000 displaced. Now, I mean, what you're saying about the internal politics of Israel, many will think is a point well made. Nasrallah, the head, of course, of Hezbollah, has repeatedly vowed to, quote, destroy Israel. We need to put that into the... I've got a couple of texts for you, Rami, if I may use your first name, Rami Murtada. We have, if I may read these to you... Why, ask the Lebanese ambassador why for 40 years their country has done nothing to stop Hezbollah. And another one, please ask the ambassador from Lebanon why they have been harbouring Hezbollah for all these years, allowing them to embed their fighters on the border with Israel to dig tunnels? Why have they allowed Iran to arm them with tens of thousands of missiles? Why don't they kick Hezbollah out of Lebanon if they're so worried about civilian casualties? And a point was made earlier on that if you're hitting Hezbollah, if your aim is to hit Hezbollah, that's not a war crime.
Well, that's a partial side of the truth. Hezbollah was created in 1982 under Israeli occupation of Lebanon. So Israel did everything to empower Hezbollah, and it helped in the creation of Hezbollah. What became later on Hezbollah started as local resistance in these occupied territories. And you know the geopolitics of the region. They reached out to Iran, or the Iran reached out to them. So it all started because of Israeli occupation of Lebanon. Had Israel not occupied Lebanon for more than part of Lebanon for more than 22 years, probably we would not have seen Hezbollah. Exactly the same way, had Israel had not occupied the Palestinian territories, we probably would not have seen Hamas. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy for Israel. They start scapegoating one single group, but they disregard that it's their behavior which is leading to further extremism in the region. To answer to that is to flip the dynamic, is to move towards peace. And as to the discussion you were having with your guests on religion, religion was never a factor. Judaism is a well-respected faith in our region. It's part and parcel of our social fabric, and it has never been about religion. It's a political conflict that needs to be addressed, that needs to find a solution. And the way to find the solution is through international legality. We have Security Council resolutions that Israel is refraining from implementing for more than six decades now. What do you expect? I mean, for every action, there is a reaction. So now
and on
we
it goes.
Are,
And yeah, on it goes.
Exactly.
One thing
it's a race to the bottom. It's a vicious cycle that we need to stop at some point. And war, genocide, is not an answer to that. Well, it will only inflammate emotions.
What do you mean by genocide?
Well, when 600 people are killed in one day in Lebanon, 600 civilians, when Israeli F-35 airplanes carpet bomb different towns and villages, What do you call that? Even the UN has called it war crimes. When they detonate electronic devices in civilian areas without prior knowledge of who is in possession at the time of the attack, when these pagers detonated in pharmacies, in grocery stores, in supermarkets, what do you call that? Even the UN has called it a war crime.
Sure. And if you're one of the people in northern Israel, and the 60,000 people who have been displaced, if you listen to the words of Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, I just want to know, I mean, it's all about putting yourself in the other situation. There's not enough of that. And I'd like to imagine the footsteps of another person. And Rami Murtada, if you could do this, if you were an Israeli in northern Israel who'd been displaced and you hear these words from Nasrallah, our struggle will only end when the Zionist entity is obliterated. We recognize no treaty with it, no ceasefire, no peace agreements, whether separate or consolidated. We condemn all plans for negotiation with Israel. We regard all negotiators as enemies, for the reason that such negotiation is nothing but the recognition of the legitimacy of the Zionist occupation of Palestine. If you were an Israeli in northern Israel, what would you think of those words? You've been talking about genocide. What would you think about those words?
If you're a Palestinian or a Lebanese and you hear Mr. Smotrich or Mr. Ben Gazir saying...
Well, I'm not asking you that. Yeah, I'm not asking you that. We know about that. We know about that. We know about that. We know about that.
That's what I'm saying. We should
I'm asking you what you would think of those words if you're an Israeli.
No, of course. The Lebanese, this is not the official position of the Lebanese government. We're part and parcel of a peace initiative. There is There is inflammatory narrative everywhere in the region. What I'm saying is that we have to cut this vicious cycle and reverse the trend, de-escalate, and then immediately after go towards political settlement of disputes. Singling out one particular statement or position does not help, because I can bring you thousands statements by the other side which also go in the same direction. And one statement justifies the statement from the other side. We shouldn't single out as if that's the source of all evil.
Finally, the missile that Hezbollah launched, people are asking, is a proper escalation, the first time it's reached Tel Aviv. Let me ask you one last question.
Well, let me tell you that Hezbollah, although it's firing missiles, but it's only targeting military targets. No single Israeli civilians was targeted in the... And that's not the case from the Israeli side. As I'm telling you, only on Monday, 600 civilian Lebanese were slaughtered.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for coming on this morning. We have to leave it there, but it's been very instructive and important to hear from you. Rami Mortada, Lebanon's ambassador to the UK. Any more thoughts, please get in touch. It's 10:35.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And here is the news from Bethan Holm.
Thanks, Nikki. Lebanese health officials say six people have been killed in the latest strikes, which Israel describe as extensive in southern Lebanon. 13 people have been injured. Earlier, Israel intercepted a missile attack towards Tel Aviv, the first time the city has been targeted by Hezbollah. The group say the attack was directed at the headquarters of Israeli intelligence agency Mossad in retaliation to recent attacks. Well, the Prime Minister is urging British nationals in Lebanon to board commercial flights out of the country as soon as possible. Sir Keir Starmer has told the BBC he fears the Middle East could be on the brink of all-out war. Women who alleged they had intrusive medical tests while working at Harrods say the group intend to make a complaint to the regulator about a doctor. Several women have told the BBC they were made to have checkups while Mohammed Al-Fayed was in charge of the business. He's been accused of sexually assaulting a number of women. The doctor has been approached for comment. And the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has insisted he won't back down from his claim the NHS is broken, despite the BBC reporting growing unease about the government's messaging. Speaking at Labour's conference, he said the NHS is letting people down and there must be reform. Well, those were the news headlines. Now of the sports, here's Katie Smith.
And we're starting with an update from Manchester City this morning. They've confirmed now that midfielder Rodri has suffered a ligament injury to his right knee. It was sustained during their draw with Arsenal on Sunday in the Premier League. He was subbed off in the first half. They say, though, assessment remains ongoing to ascertain the full extent of the injury and expected prognosis. Well, City beat Watford, last night in the League Cup with 9 changes from that team fielded on Sunday. Commentary continues tonight on 5 Live. We've got Liverpool against West Ham. It's also Arsenal against Bolton, while Manchester United start their Europa League campaign against Twente. Former United and Real Madrid defender Rafael Varane has retired from football today at the age of 31. He joined Italian side Como on a free transfer in July, but he suffered a knee injury on his debut last month. He says he'll stay on at the club now in a non-playing role. He won 18 trophies at Real Madrid, including 4 Champions League titles in a 10-year spell. In his time at United, he won both the FA Cup and League Cup. On to cricket, the final round of county championship matches start this morning. Surrey have already secured the title and Kent's relegation has been confirmed. Lancashire, Nottinghamshire and Warwickshire are still fighting to avoid the drop, and you can listen to every match available on the BBC Sport website and app. And Australia are leading England in the second quarter of their third and decisive match of their netball series in Victoria. In fact, it's just ticked over to half time, so England currently trailing 24-30. No England team has ever won a 3-match series down under.
On Radio 4, the more you listen, the more you see.
We're living under more tyranny today than our founding fathers did in 1775.
A US presidential election is looming, but underneath, conspiracy culture rears its head once again. And nothing is as it seems.
All those things that we had feared our whole lives was coming true.
Burn the house down and start over. That seems to be the way.
It's America through the looking glass. Join me, Gabriel Gatehouse, as the coming storm continues.
Listen on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Nikki Campbell.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Let's go to Beirut. Lina Sinjab is the BBC correspondent there. Lina, good morning. Tell us what is happening, please.
Well, tension is still looming in the air in Beirut. People are still running away from the south, and yet another Israeli airstrikes in southern Lebanon that left 6 people killed and 15 injured. That's according to the Ministry of Health here in Lebanon. It's really a sense of urgency, a sense of fear in Lebanon. People are worried about their lives. Many families are reaching Beirut to seek shelter, but many people even in Beirut are leaving, trying to go further north to the mountains area because they feel Beirut itself is not safe, especially after the airstrike that hit Dahiya area in southern Beirut yesterday. So people are extremely worried, extremely nervous about how things are going to move forward.
Give us an idea, if you would, because you know the area so well. Give us an idea of what, and I hate the phrase, but you know what I mean, ordinary people think of Hezbollah.
That's a very important question these days, because the country has always been split between those who support Hezbollah and those who feel that Hezbollah, a single militant Islamic group, a Shia group, dragging the country into different directions that not necessarily the whole country agrees on, or even the Lebanese government wouldn't agree on their lines. But they're a powerful party. They've become political one, and they are in the parliament, so they have big representation. However, over the past year, almost everyone, even among the Shia community, have expressed their refusal of any war. They don't want Lebanon to be dragged in full-fledged war. They do still remember what happened in 2006, where Beirut itself was under bombardment, infrastructure destroyed, people fleeing to neighboring Syria. And that's, nobody wants to see today. Even those who are fleeing today are on the road to flee from southern Lebanon. However, especially in the past week, with the intensified Israeli attacks, with the pager detonation, in civilian areas, 3,000 were injured last week, 600 killed in one single day on Monday with Israeli airstrikes. The anger is mounting among the community, especially the Shia community, and they've become more in solidarity with Hezbollah. Of course, that doesn't mean that they want Hezbollah to escalate and go into a full-fledged war, but no doubt that they are siding with Hezbollah because of what they say as Israeli aggression and indiscriminate attacks in civilian areas.
Tell me about the British community in Lebanon. There's thousands and thousands of British people live there.
Yes, indeed. There are expats who are here. There are people who have lived here for so long. There are people who are married to Lebanese and they're part of the society here. We've seen the warning from the British government urging people to leave as soon as possible, getting commercial flights out. But so far, it's hard to tell who is going to decide. Of course, one would imagine that people who have children have the priority to leave because they worry about the safety of their children. But I think it's a case-by-case issue, depending on everyone's situation, their location, their proximity to the hotspots of the areas, and what kind of job they're doing, if they would leave or stay. So this is something that was announced early hours of the morning. We will have to wait and see how it will unfold and get official numbers on how many people actually left or are planning to leave.
And the great fear must be of that ground war.
Absolutely. Also, 2006 is very much dominant in people's thinking or in the analysis thinking. You know, Hezbollah knows the territory. They have, like, their skills on the ground. And that's what happened in 2006 when there was, you know, a ground invasion. The Israelis realized that Hezbollah have a lot more power on the ground inside Lebanon. But, you know, and this is also a calculation that I think both sides, both leadership are thinking of. But I think also, you know, everyone is vigilant about not taking the war or the situation now to a further, you know, damage or concern to have a ground invasion. Because I don't think, A, it's anyone's interest. And I think also Hezbollah, despite their messages of defiance and support of the Palestinians, and, you know, they will not stop until there's a ceasefire in Lebanon. If you analyze all their actions in the past year, and even in the past week, although they are trying to show that they are resilient and they are trying to stand for their words, but all their attacks are calculated ones so that they don't encourage a full-fledged war. They haven't targeted any civilian areas. They haven't targeted any infrastructure. You know, they spread fear in northern Israel for sure. They've forced thousands of Israelis in northern Israel to flee their homes. But we haven't seen any reported casualties among civilians. And I think that would be the red line for Israel as well to, you know, go into a full-fledged war against Lebanon.
Isabella reporting, Lena reporting, Lena Sinjab, their BBC correspondent there with that perspective. Isabella, that's Isabella, this is Isabella in Tripoli. Professor Paul Moorcraft coming up as well, commentator on military strategy, author of upcoming book Israel's Forever War. He will be interesting. Hello, Isabella, can you hear me?
Hi, yes, I can.
And you're leaving soon. Tell us more.
Yes, well, hopefully. I am currently in Tripoli. I've lived in Beirut for the past year. I left Beirut yesterday to come up to Tripoli to buy a ticket and organise a boat, buy my boat ticket to sail across to Turkey. And though it's not confirmed, hopefully the journey is this evening in a few hours.
Okay, well, the best of luck with that. What has it been like for you since October the 7th? My goodness me, we're nearly at the first anniversary of it. What is it? How have things changed?
Well, of course, things have changed a lot. I mean, I'd lived in Lebanon only about a month, I suppose, before October 7th happened. October 8th is when it all started in Lebanon. I guess the first thing I would say that as a British person, you've become very quickly very aware that Lebanon is divided into two groups of people. The people who choose to be there, like myself, like other people with strong passports, and the many people who choose to make a life for themselves in Lebanon and Beirut specifically, and the people who have no choice to be there. So I found that from the beginning, I grappled a lot with whether to stay, whether to leave. I decided to stay. And I found that the mindset I needed was that I felt no real risk until very, very recently to myself on any worries about my own mortality, and just a great deal of care and concern and fear and sadness for the many people for who this is their reality and there's no escape. You know, their futures are entirely dependent on Israel and Israel's decisions, a country that a regime that seems to have no red lines. So my decision to leave recently is because I can't justify to myself any reason to stay. I'm studying a master's of human rights here. Its classes have been moved online for the week. And for the sake of my family and friends outside of Lebanon, I can't justify any reason to put them through the stress of me staying. And I don't want to take the... There are many people who later on might get offered extraordinary measures, emergency measures to help them leave. I, for now, have the privilege, because of my passport, to leave to Turkey, where I have family. I'm half Turkish. I will take that while I can, spend my own money, rather than take anything from anyone else.
Right.
Sorry,
well,
I know my voice is shaking.
I can understand what it's been like. I like for you, absolutely, which is a noble aspiration and quite proper. people hearing you say about Israel and red lines, there will be many people who take issue with that. There will be others who are very pleased that you said that. I always have to remind people of that. That's the nature of it. And I can't take issue with everything everybody says for the sake of it. I just want to put all that on the record. But also, I mean, Hezbollah, an organization whose leader has said that he wants to obliterate Israel. How are they viewed by people that you know, maybe expats and people in the, you know, who have nothing to do with Hezbollah, with the people that you talk about from all over the world also who live there? What, how do they view Hezbollah?
I would say, and, you know, I want to be cautious. I'm 23 years old. I have many friends, most of whom work in the human rights industry, who are from Lebanon, Syria, and, you know, foreign countries like Tunisia or European countries. You know, I am no expert. I'm still a student trying to learn about this stuff. However, from what I can comment on and what I've seen, there's two perceptions of Hezbollah, because there's Hezbollah in general, you know, I mean, it is a terrorist group and political party that has done great damage to Lebanon, a country that's really, really suffered for years. And then there's Hezbollah during this war. And I think that you've got perhaps just the perspective of a bigger enemy, which is the Israeli regime. And people will criticize Hezbollah for the things it's done to Lebanon across the past years, its political views. I would say most everyone I know disagrees with them for that. But I've met very few people, not none, but very few, who feel now is the time to blame Hezbollah for anything. From my own perspective, we know why Hezbollah came about during the 1980s in the civil war as a response to Israeli occupation. And we know why Hezbollah started firing rockets on October the 8th. So it is complicated, but I think we just can't lose sight of who the real enemy is.
Well, that's your perspective, and it's all about letting people express those, of course, backed by Iran in 1982. Thank you very much indeed, Isabella. All the best with your journey. It's been a troubled time for you and so many others. Professor Paul Moorcraft. Professor Paul, what do you
Paul, yes, we've worked together before, and I'm very pleased to work with you again.
Likewise. It's great to see your name come up here on my list. What do you make of what's going on?
I divide it in two. There's a lot of comparisons. I've worked in Lebanon and lived quite a long time on the Israeli side, but not in the last few months. So the last interview was very instructive. It's a bit like the First World War, if I can make a comparison. It's like a sleepwalking to a major conflict. Everybody says they don't want war. But ratchet by ratchet, it's all kind of by accident. There are a few people in Israel, in the IDF, who want war, who want to destroy Hezbollah now, but the vast majority of people do not want war on either side, I believe. But it's a kind of accidental escalation. And I wanted to also say, if we're drawing historical comparisons, I must confess to being an historian, that the Dunkirk parallel is not accurate. You see it in the newspapers. That is a lot of tosh, because Britain in Dunkirk acted alone. This time, Britain has two ships off the coast, whereas there are two fleets of a carrier-led American aircraft shipping and so on. It's a massive backup by the Americans. So the idea of Royal Marines getting people off the beaches in little boats is not probably going to happen, because my argument is that I'm one of the few people who doesn't think that is, I don't think Israel's going to invade. I think they learned enough in 1982 and in 2006. I don't think they are going to invade, because there's a saying that air power is a bit like having an affair, in that you get gratification without commitment. And the commitment is boots on the ground. I personally, and I might be completely wrong, they've got a division on the border. I don't think the Israelis are going to make the same mistake again. They don't want to be pulled into a land war against really good fighters like Hezbollah. Does that make sense to you, Nicky?
It does, and as ever, you articulate it so well as a historian and a rather good one. I'm going to bring Nomi Bar-Yakov in as well, international negotiator from Chatham House. Nomi, hi.
Hi, Nick. How are you this morning?
I'm very well, thank you. So, troubled times. What are the possibilities, do you think, of a ground war?
I agree with your previous speaker. I only caught the tail end of what he said, but I fully agree that a land invasion, boots on the ground, is unlikely. Of course, things can change, but as of today, in the here and now, it's not looking likely. I know there's a lot of speculation in the press, and I beg to differ, and given that it's not in Israel's interest. Hezbollah are very sophisticated fighters. You know, they have taken a huge hit. No one knows exactly how much of a hit in terms of their arsenal. They have extremely sophisticated arsenal, including ballistic missiles, which, as you know, they shot today for the first time, aiming at Mossad headquarters in Tel Aviv. And it's not in their interest to head for an all-out war. It's not in Israel's interest. And again, I stress, it's extremely costly for Israel in terms of human lives of their own. Of course, it's very costly also for Lebanon, and more so at present. But with a ground invasion, Israel has taken very serious hits, and it has learned its lessons. It didn't work in 82. It didn't work in 2006. And the withdrawal in 2000 from the 40-kilometer so-called security zone was one that was very much a decision that I think will be one that would be repeated. So it would only be a question of how long are they going to hold on to a so-called security zone and how many lives are they going to be willing to live with. And the answer is they would rather not do any of it.
Well, we heard earlier on from all sorts of commentators and callers saying different things and texts, of course, claims and counterclaims. We heard one person saying the difference is Hezbollah are not targeting civilians. We heard that, lots of people up in arms about that, lots of people up in arms about all sorts of stuff, inevitably, when we ever discuss anything related to this. What is the Israeli perspective on all this? Let's find out from Aria in Manchester. I hope I got your name right.
Almost.
Close but no cigar, as they say.
It says Aria.
Aria, right.
Yes,
I just want to hear, we've heard other perspectives. We had the Lebanese ambassador on earlier on, and he had very strong views, you may be heard. I just want to hear, between now and 11 o'clock, the Israeli perspective. Over to you.
Well, I'm not going to pretend to represent Israel. I represent myself as an Israeli who lives in the UK for the last 33 years or so. It can be only one solution. If the Arab world will decide that Israel is an entity that it's okay to live with, to live next to, then there's no war. Finished. Israel doesn't go and attack any countries just because they're Arab or Muslim. Never, ever. It's never happened. It's never going to happen. But on the other side, there's nothing in their eyes or view just to destroy Israel. And that's it. They don't want to see Israel. They don't want to know Israel. They keep saying from the river to the sea, which means no Israel. Hezbollah is a group that loudly and clearly say, we're going to destroy Israel. So it's come into basic belief between two religions. I'm sorry to say it. One believe that the Jews must be dead because they're no good. And the other one trying to live in ancient country that they used to be there, been kicked out of this country about 3 or 4 times.
And of course,
the same country.
Sure. And of course, there are people, by just looking at the clock, there are people, of course, in the Israeli cabinet and other leading politicians who take a very much extreme manifestation of the latter, yes, view. And and that is where people such as the ambassadors to say, they do say, they use this word, a massively controversial word. They say that the agenda is genocide. What would you say to them?
Okay. Well, there is extremists in the Israeli government, no doubt about that. And very, very far from genocide. Israel did not start against Hamas. Hamas did whatever they did very badly and surprised Israel immensely. Hamas using their own citizen in front of the guns in order for Israel to come attack Hamas and to be blamed. Look, they're killing Palestinian, they're killing innocent Palestinian. I'll give just a small example. So,
well, we haven't got time for a small example, but of course there are a lot of innocent people being killed in Lebanon at the moment. Yeah.
Yes, I know. It's the same. The example I'm going to say is, let's say you walk on the street and you've got six front against Israel now. You got six people around you, keep smacking you, and you don't want to smack them back.
I understand what you're saying. Okay, I understand what you're saying. We have to leave it there. We will inevitably return to it.
The Voice and thank of you. The UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News, that's 11 o'clock. This is Matthew Carter. The Prime Minister is urging Britons in Lebanon to board commercial flights out of the country as soon as possible. The Israeli military says it's carrying out extensive airstrikes in southern Lebanon targeting Hezbollah. The group, which is prescribed as a terrorist organisation by the UK, fired a ballistic missile that reached the Israeli city of Tel Aviv. Our international editor Jeremy Bowen says Israel may be preparing for a ground invasion of Lebanon.
Israel's strategy essentially is that if it inflicts a lot of pain on Hezbollah and the area of South Lebanon, they are hoping by, as they put it, escalating to de-escalate, that this will stop Hezbollah putting rockets into Israel. On every sort of measure of Hezbollah's past behavior, it certainly won't do that. Those rockets will continue, then Israel will escalate further, which may get up to the point where it decides to send troops into Lebanon.
Figures from the cooperative group show shoplifting and fraud has cost the company almost £40 million in the first half of the year. The figure is an increase of 19% on 2023. The Health Secretary Wes Streeting says teams of senior doctors are to work across the NHS to implement reforms aimed at getting people treated quicker and back into the workplace. The Office for National Statistics estimates that around 2.8 million people are out of work due to ill health. That's up by 500,000 on 2019. Speaking at the Labour Party conference in Liverpool in the past hour, Mr. Streeting said there would be a targeted rollout of his plan.
We're sending crack teams of top clinicians to hospitals across the country to roll out reforms developed by surgeons to treat more patients and cut waiting lists. And I can announce today that the first 20 hospitals targeted by these teams will be in areas with the highest numbers of people off work sick.
The furniture retailer DFS has recorded a pre-tax loss of £1.7 million for the year to the end of June. The company said attacks by Houthi rebels on vessels in the Red Sea had delayed some shipments and that consumer demand had also been exceptionally low. NHS figures.